Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I have to tell you, I'm very excited to have a returning guest on the program. And you know, I make funny comments about returning guests. You know they must be good. Well, Leo Haviland is that good, and I am very delighted to have him back on the program. He is a wealth of knowledge with 3 decades of experience on Wall Street trading environment, graduated University of Chicago and Cornell Law School, and he's written the book Words on the Street, The Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. LeoHaviland.com. LeoHaviland.com is the website, and Leo does a lot of great work. He has worked for Goldman Sachs. He's done a lot of research, has had a career in stock, interest rate, foreign exchange, commodity, all of those battlefields, and dealt with a lot of different institutions, has done work for individuals. His perspective is macro. He looks at this intertwining and interplay of equity, debt, currency, commodity, all of that stuff, and of course, regulatory overlay and approaches. And he's got some perspective that we so badly need right now with all the things happening in the world. So, Leo, with that, thank you for your time and welcome back.
Thanks very much, David. It's an honor to be on your excellent show.
Thank you, sir. Well, let's dive right in because I want to make the most of your perspective insight. Okay, where to start? We'll maybe start with the latest. At the time we were putting this show on, we hear of a deal, quote unquote, a six parties or six nation deal with Iran on a nuclear, don't make nuclear bombs, basically the deal to not do that, a nuclear treaty or agreement.
Yes, it's a great accomplishment by all the nations involved to agree. Its consequences for oil, of course, eventually means more supply coming from Iran. And that, given the Saudis' desire to maintain market share, should maintain pressure on prices for quite some time.
Yeah, and I was, you know, I was expecting with the news of that to see an immediate impact, and I'm not seeing one yet with the markets. And it may be that it takes a little while for that to be. I guess it's too soon. Maybe there's some skepticism on whether the agreement holds. Maybe there's skepticism on how quickly Iran will bring its oil supplies back online for the global marketplace. How long do you think it will be, just from, you know, your perspective, Leo? Do you think it's going to take a while for that really to be felt, or are you also surprised not to see an immediate impact?
It's mildly surprising that the market didn't go down sharply, at least for a while. However, the promise of an agreement over the past several days has increasingly become likely. Mm-hmm. So, to use the metaphor, it's been built in to current prices to some extent.
Okay. Well, that's good. And you know, the other, you know, big obvious and very exciting thing to me, exciting is not the right word, the reassuring or maybe some just flat out peacefulness, is that with the reduced tensions with Iran, you know, that'll make passage through the Strait of Hormuz and general that area of the world just not so tense, and maybe we can get some cooperation and assistance from Iran in dealing with some of the challenges we face in that part of the world.
You make an excellent point, right?
Because I don't lose a lot of sleep, but it's those things that do concern me about where we are and some of the potential problems we can face. Okay, so, and I do agree with your perspective about where Saudi Arabia wants to be. And in fact, a lot of these countries, the smaller ones that are ever so dependent, Leo, on their oil exports for their revenue, majority if not all of their revenues, and some of these countries that are significantly smaller than Iran or Saudi Arabia, and they all need the oil to pump, and they all need as much revenue as they can get.
True, and currently, David, there's substantial oversupply of hydrocarbons in general above ground in industry stocks, and what this Iranian nuclear deal may do is cause U.S. shale producers, who may have been particularly hopeful that an agreement was not reached,
right,
sit back and wonder how high are prices actually going to go over the next 2, 3, 4 years?
Yes.
How should they hedge?
Yeah, that's a good point, Leo, because that is really going to play into this. And so a sustained lower, you know, let's say just that we have sustained oil in the, you know, $50 a barrel range, as opposed to a return to a sustained $80 a barrel range, that, of course, has an enormous impact on the U.S. economy, but also could be a real benefit to another major global player, another major economy, that being China, who has had its share of problems of late that we've been hearing about. And that's the next thing I'd love to get your perspective on. So if we could do this, let's grab a quick break. We'll come right back and talk more with Leo Haviland. He has the book, Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. And LeoHaviland.com is the website. And we have seen several great essays from Leo, and all of that's available. You can take a look at his website. Quick break. We'll be right back with Leo.
When it comes to finding a financial advisor you can trust, do you know the right questions to ask? David Holland has written a popular book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy. Or if you want to meet one-on-one with David to talk about your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book with no cost, no obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. Or visit PlanStronger.com.
And we're back. Leo Haviland on the line. Great resource to us in looking at these very interesting global developments and the markets. And so I teed it up for you there, Leo, right before the break. China, and they've had some really unprecedented action on the part of their government, and this finessing of a communist government trying to make free market capitalism play nice. And it's really, it's a very interesting and a little scary thing to watch.
Well, to flip to the United States situation for a moment, David, one also could ask how free market the Federal Reserve and some of its actions have been over the past several years.
A great point. And that's actually the next thing I wanted to get to after China. And it's interesting how both the obvious similarities of some of the actions and the mandate that the Federal Reserve has, I don't know what right way to describe it, but kind of just put on that mantle and held on to it. And then that mandate, I suppose you could make the argument that the mandate, the way they've interpreted their mandate, has morphed or maybe expanded significantly from what some people would say is really what they're supposed to do.
Some might say they've become a fourth branch of government.
Okay. All right. Well, we could definitely go to that. And with regard to that, I know in some of your recent essays that our listeners can find over on your website, leohaviland.com, that you've had some descriptions that you've set forth, some scenarios, and I found them very interesting, Leo, because, you know, all of the talk and jawboning that we've seen for calendar year 2015 and even back in 14, and even prior to that was, you know, hey, the Fed's going to raise rates. Hey, the Fed's going to raise rates. Hey, the Fed's going to raise rates. And we haven't seen it. And there's a lot of talk about it. And, you know, there's expectation, of course, in many circles that we could see a rate increase in the fall of 2015. But I'm not persuaded yet that that's going to happen. But you make set forth a strong fact pattern for what actually might cause the Fed to do, and I was really, you know, struck by this, to do more quantitative easing as opposed to raising rates.
Yes, if the economy doesn't rally strongly, or if the S&P 500 drops 10% or more with international growth remaining sluggish, there's a chance that the Fed will remain accommodative longer than people expect, and possibly even might engage in renewed easing actions if, say, equities fell close to 20%.
Wow.
But
that's such a wow.
The consensus being that they're going to likely raise in September is still probably on the table. But one shouldn't say that even if that occurs, they're likely not to renew easing if some of these other scenarios take place.
Okay, that's a better way to say it. Thank you. Because you could very much have, maybe a quarter point increase in that federal fund, the reserve rate, discount rate. But with that ticking up, what's it sitting now at about a quarter point? So it could maybe go to half a point?
Yes.
Okay, and so even with that, you could still see that they could hold that and then still go about another round of, few key strokes on the keyboard, and money is created that then purchases our own bonds and such in the open market.
If the economy weakened, although most people aren't seeing that as a tremendously likely scenario, the Fed could switch directions.
Okay.
Going back to China, though, David,
yes,
even without the excitement of the great up and the great down in equities, before mm-hmm. all that, the growth forecast had been cut. There's hints of significant problems in the property and shadow banking mm-hmm. sector.
Mm-hmm.
Base metals, with China being a big consumer, have fallen in price for quite some time. Electricity production this year is flat year on year.
Mm.
Let's face it, a country who's having great economic expansion is not going to be engaged in some of these little military adventures they've had with the islands. It isn't going to go so strongly against corruption.
Mm.
So the weakness in Chinese equities lately only tells a little bit of the story. There's all these other things that are going on and have been going on.
That's interesting, Leo, because the traditional or the quintessential perspective and commentary about China is this perpetual, gargantuan GDP that they continue to pop out, and you've got to ask the questions, which you've given pointed to all the breadcrumbs that are definitely indicative of a country that is having challenges, and you spoke of the run up and then the pullback, and their equity market index, I think it's the Shanghai index, is still up some 20% year to date in 2015. So they've posted a lot of gains, but there could be some real challenges again, even with some of the things like we talked about with oil. They where do you see this going? I guess my question is for China, do they then embrace more fully what we've done with the United States with Federal Reserve, and then what we're also seeing with the Europeans doing their own federal type easing? Would we see that more robustly with China?
There seems to be an international consensus, David, to kick the can down the road.
Mm.
Greece, as an example, may give some signs of being a headline solution, but giving 80 or 90 billion euros to that country is only going to increase their debt and enable them to delay ultimate satisfaction of a lot of their existing obligations. The U.S. Continues to not address its long-term budget deficit problems,
right.
Still runs a short-term deficit, and still needs the Fed to keep a highly accommodative monetary policy for Americans in general to remain pretty happy. And
yeah.
So China's actions with equities, first to release the liquidity so that the Shanghai ran up, and then to tighten, is all part of the same patterns that we've been seeing here.
Yeah, so this is really a global phenomenon. Japan has been in permanent QE for
excellent point.
Yeah, for a couple of decades, and now we've got the Europeans and China looking to do the same as what we've done, and of course we're still on the front end of the European piece, and I would like to talk a little bit more about that. Before we leave the U.S. debt, you made a strong point. We still have, even though, according to usdebtclock.org, even though we pull in $3.1 trillion in total federal tax revenue, we are still running a deficit spending of almost $500 billion.
It shows how highly skilled our politicians are.
No, you know what? That's something, a comment somebody
remarkable.
Might... Remarkable. Yeah, at first blush, it's, that's funny, Leo, but you know what? It's not.
No.
It's sad.
You make an excellent point, David.
It is sad. I don't like the point I'm making, but I appreciate your perspective on it. Let's grab another break and we'll come back. I'd love to dig a little deeper with Leo. Leo Haviland is our guest today, ladies and gentlemen. You can see why he's back. LeoHaviland.com and the book Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. Quick break. Be right back with Leo.
Do you know how to get the most from your Social Security? Don't let a simple mistake prevent you from receiving all the benefits you've earned. Certified financial planner David Holland recently showed a retiring couple how they could enjoy an extra $84,000 in Social Security benefits over their expected lifetime. Wow! Call Holland Financial today for your one-on-one appointment to get your free Social Security analysis. No cost or obligation. David can give you a free analysis and show you the optimal age to start drawing Social Security so you can maximize your benefits. No cost or obligation. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Leo Haviland on the line with me, our returning guest, and the website, leohaviland.com, H-A-V-I-L-A-N-D, leohaviland.com, and the book, Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. You know, before we leave Greece and maybe the European continent there, Leo, I wanted to ask you, there's obviously, you made the comment about whatever that final number was for the aid package. What did you say? It was like 90 billion?
$80-90 billion in euros.
Yeah. Okay, good grief. Okay. So that, if I were a betting man, I'd say that they're never going to see that money back.
I'm with you, David.
So is it simply, as you put before the break, just simply a kicking of the can down the road that the current politicians involved just simply do not want to deal with it and they're just going to kick it down knowing that it's never going to come around? Or, is there any, I guess the question is, I think I know the answer to that question, is there any hope that things can be turned around in such a way that they could really expect to see, they seem to be putting good money after bad. Is there any way for this to turn? Is there any chance in your mind, because I don't see it, that they can turn this around with the degree of debt overlay here that this country has to try to support?
Not in any significant terms.
Okay.
But the venture over in Europe is to maintain the political unity and the political experiment of the European Union and the Eurozone. So keeping Greece in makes them feel triumphant from that perspective.
Okay. So let me play devil's advocacy down here at some point down the road. You know, how long does this buy them? A couple, 3 years?
It seems so.
Okay.
Assuming the Greek parliament approves it and actually does what they promised to do.
Okay. So let's say all that plays out and 3 years later, we're back in the same place. And
right.
This next time around, the Greeks say not going to do it, or simply the creditors say we're not going to do it anymore, and they quote unquote default. Germany can't send a aircraft carrier over and say these islands are ours now, can they?
Not in this day and age.
Not in this day and age, right? I mean, so there's no recourse.
Correct, other than cutting off the financing.
Okay, so they cut off the financing, so they stop putting the good money after the bad, but there's no retrieving, and so at that point they default, and then they know. Well, I guess my thinking or question is, and this is something that a lot of people probably wonder about, Leo, and you may be able to speak to this, is the defaulting. How does that kick, quote unquote, kick them out of the euro?
Well, the legal issues there, of course, are quite.
They're convoluted, right?
Some would say that they don't have to leave the euro or
right.
Can't be forced to leave the euro. So I defer to the experts on
right,
that
right.
question, David.
Yeah, I had the same question in my mind, and I'm thinking, am I missing something obvious? And you've answered it, because it's a very convoluted thing. They're on the euro. They could stay on the euro. The question is, can they, you know, can the other European unions, union members say, hey, look, you're out. It would seem to me that it, without the financing, maybe a more practical rollout scenario here is without the financing, they've got no choice but to exit kind of on their own and say, look, we're off the euro. We're bringing back the, is it the drachma?
Yes.
Okay, they bring that back and say we're instituting a new currency and, you know, we're doing our own thing and we've got to do that in order to have our own capital and our own financing, if you will. And they bootstrap, kind of like rebooting a computer and hoping it comes back on and works.
Excellent metaphor, David. You're right.
It reminds me of Jurassic Park when they did that. They were hoping that when they rebooted the machine that all the gates and electrical fences would keep the T-Rex contained. But if not, then you could have T-Rexes running through the streets of Greece, because it is a very scary concept that I suspect they didn't really think a lot about, or maybe they did when they put this union together, and I'm not being critical of the union, but just that the potential for this to occur. And the other thing, Leo, that's interesting to me is you have some countries who are in the euro, the European Union, of course, but are not on the euro. And like Poland, for example, and their economy, from what I've read, has done pretty well not being on the euro.
Yes.
And it's given them an ability to compete. And is that part of what, I mean, I know there's some obvious things about Greece, about their pensions and their lack of aggressive tax collection and some of the challenges there with revenue and some of the other cultural aspect of their situation. But they're also their inability to unilaterally devalue their currency to make their products and services more competitive, because they don't have control over that.
Excellent point. And currency issues matter quite a bit these days. For example, the strength of the broad real trade weighted dollar, one can ask how that could tie into United States corporate earnings and how it could tie into possible future trends for the U.S. equity markets as well as emerging marketplaces.
Well, that's another area that is interesting to think about and talk through, Leo, and I'm glad you brought that up. The dollar to euro, you know, we're at a relatively, you know, a pretty strong, in my opinion, and you could please expand or correct me on this. You know, at the time we're doing the program here, it's about $1.10 to buy a euro. And so that's pretty strong compared to where it has been. And what kind of direction do you think, again, it's always a comparison of, you know, strength versus the other countries, not necessarily just a strength of the country in and of itself. So relatively speaking, the U.S. has been stronger in some respects than some of our compatriots. So do you view a potential continued strengthening or at least stability of the dollar versus euro?
Yes. It probably is effective to say, look at the dollar against all its trading partners, because
yeah,
that'll give a sense of really what its bullish or bearish trend may be. And
okay,
since the latter months of last year, it has strengthened and strengthened, and had reached a high in March of 2015 of about 95. And at the end of June, it was still around 94, so it hasn't retreated much relative to its current strengthening pattern of the past several months, or indeed going back to its lows 2 or 3 years ago. And your audience may be particularly interested, David, in knowing that the nominal trade-weighted dollar, not the real, made a low on May 15th, which was not long before the peak in the S&P 500 on May 20th at 21.35. So the continuing strengthening of the dollar, should it occur, which is what I think it will do,
okay,
is a real warning sign for U.S. equities, of course, for emerging marketplace stocks as well.
Yeah, definitely. Well, so if we see a continued stability and or strengthening of the dollar, then that translates to, you know, the potential for the S&P, which of course a lot of those revenues, what is it? It's a full, the percentage, it's a large percentage of S&P 500 company earnings come from overseas and have to get translated back to dollars. So there's the impact, and there's also the potential impact on our exports of those companies as well as others with the dollar making their goods and services not as competitive against some of these falling currency prices of the other currencies with our trading partners that you mentioned.
You make an excellent point, David.
Okay, well, good. You know, Leo, I need to have you on about once a month just to make sure I got this stuff straight in my head. It is awfully complicated. I have to really stop and focus when we talk about this stuff. And for our listeners out there, you know, I hope that they find this helpful because I do. It is a very complicated and convoluted world. And all of these things, not only are they where they are today, but, you know, some of my questions are where are we today, but what do we expect in the future? You know, what's going to come down the road? And all this plays into, you know, how we look at our finances and what people should be thinking about.
You're absolutely right.
Well, I tell you what, anybody who's trying to do this on their own, they need to take a lot of what we talked about to heart and pay attention. And I'd love for them to go over to your website, Leo, leohaviland.com. And of course, the book, Words on the Street, Language and the American Dream on Wall Street. And we're going to continue to keep tabs on your essays, Leo. And I know that you're very busy, and we will continue to invite you. And you can just pick the times that make sense for you to join us. But I sincerely appreciate your time, and I know that my listeners will definitely appreciate your perspectives.
Well, thanks very much, David. It's an honor to be on your show, and you ask excellent questions.
Well, thank you. And sometimes knowing the questions to ask is just as important as the answers that you've provided. So thank you for that, and we will have you back, and I appreciate it. Thank you, Leo.
Thank you, David.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.